Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, hey, where you been? Buckeye Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to the Big Wednesday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. Doug LaMaurice, Nathan Baird, Stephen Means. National Championship. We're thinking about national championships, which we think about a lot here on Buckeye Talk. And we are going to give the five things we think need to happen the most for Ohio State to win a national championship in 2021. And the reason we are doing this is because last summer, in the midst of a pandemic, when we were newly into our 5 days a week podcasting situation here at Buckeye Talk, you know, we had people send a lot of great ideas for podcasts. And somebody sent an idea, and it was the five most important things that need to happen for Ohio State to win a national title this season. But it was for 2020, and we never got to it. And now we are going to go over. This is kind of fun when you do this stuff. You ask for stuff ahead of time, and then you wait to see how it happens. And then you see the way people were thinking about things. What was right? What was a little off? This texter from the 513 is really smart about this. So we're going to reflect back a little bit and think, okay, well, this is what people thought going into last year. And then we'll think about what we say going into this year. And we will each give our five biggest things that need to happen. But Nathan and Stephen, let's start with this old list from last summer to see how people were thinking about the 2020 Buckeyes. Number one on this list of the five things Ohio State needed to win a national title last year was Justin Fields' progression. And we know that Justin Fields was great in 2019. We know he was excellent in 2020 with a couple of rough games thrown in, Nathan. Two things. What do you think of that being number one on this list from a year ago? And then did it happen? And did it turn out that that was like the main thing that Ohio State needed?
It just remind me, this wasn't our list. This was the reader's list.
This was from a texter in the 513 who sent their list of the five things.
I don't think I would have put that number one even at the time, only because the year before, it wasn't Justin Fields' deficiencies that prevented Ohio State from winning a championship. I guess you could have said that you saw other things coming, other deficiencies coming, and that he needed to be even better to overcome those. I guess I would listen to that argument. And it's so hard to gauge some things about his development because of the way that season played out, I think, as we've talked about ad nauseum, right? So do I feel like he made a big jump? I think that's a hard thing to argue, obviously. Do I feel like he regressed? I would have a hard time arguing that too. I don't know that I think that the quarterback play ended up being a massive reason why they didn't win that national championship game. And obviously the way that he played in the semifinal, that was his greatest game. So I'm open to that conversation too, that there actually was a big development that maybe didn't show up during the course of that really screwed up jumbled season, but that showed up when it needed to.
Okay. So we're discussing both, like, did it happen, but also was it correct that it was a thing that was necessary, right, for them to happen? So Stephen, go ahead. Cause I definitely have a take on this. Stephen, what do you think here?
I don't know if I would have put it at number one, but I would have put it on the list because quite frankly, the quarterback play is a significant reason for why the last two teams have won national championships. They've been at a historic level. Even if they look differently getting there, Joe Burrow competed 76% of his passes and Mac Jones was at, what, like 78 or something like that, like the highest ever or whatnot. So he did need to improve last season, even if we're being nitpicky about it. It's no different than the conversation. That's not out yet. He was a 95 in 2019, and they probably needed him to be a 99 or 100 in 2020, just given where quarterback play is headed for teams who are winning national titles.
So we have to make sure that we are the discussion is win a national title, not have a good year, not be a good player. This is beat Clemson, beat Bama, beat Oklahoma, beat everybody, beat Georgia, win a national title. And the idea of Justin Fields needed to progress and just whatever, improve whatever amount for them to win a national title in 2020. To the point that you made, Nathan, in the semifinal, Justin Fields was 22 of 28 for 385 yards and 6 touchdowns. He outplayed the number one pick in the draft, and Ohio State won. So they needed Justin Fields to outplay Trevor Lawrence in a playoff game. And it's not that Justin Fields was so far behind Trevor Lawrence the year before, but like that, I think that was necessary for them to win a national title. Like Justin Fields had to go from awesome to super awesome. And then in the national championship game, he was 17 of 33 for 194 yards and a touchdown. Now we know there's a lot of things that go into that, but he wasn't as good and they didn't win. And their only chance to win in that game was have Justin Fields go bananas and basically outscore the Alabama high-powered offense, not on his own, because Olave and Wilson would have helped him. But I would argue that even though I don't think it is the area, we would agree, Justin Fields' progression was not the area that needed the greatest improvement. The idea that, like, number one on my list is maniac superstar quarterback to outduel the other crazy superstar quarterbacks in the world, I think makes sense. And Nathan, I think it did play out kind of that, like, he was that against Clemson, they won. He wasn't that against Alabama, they lost. He's not the reason they lost to Alabama, but if he wasn't going to make a, you know, progress to the point where he was going to throw for 450 yards and 6 touchdowns, they weren't going to win.
Yeah. And again, now with the addition of hindsight, when you look back on the full season, you see why he had to take that step forward, because him just being as good as he was in 2019, there were other big parts of that roster that were taking a step back, especially on defense, right? So he was going to have to be better. We sometimes underestimate, I think, how much that defense helped him in 2019, give him security, and give him a really solid foundation to go out there and play on, and that didn't exist in 2020.
We have I am already very conflicted. I have my list of my five for 2021. How we talk about the quarterback stuff. Like, on one hand, there's the, well, if your quarterback isn't a Heisman candidate, can you win a national championship in this day and age? But also making my list, it made me rethink some things. So we are not at our 2021 list yet, but we're doing this all from hindsight. Let's not analyze this texter's list from last year and say, well, what's the list that we would have made a year ago? That's this texter's list in hindsight. Was it kind of correct? And I think certainly Justin Fields, where it is, made a lot of sense. Number two, health along the defensive line. Tyreek Smith and Teron Vincent need to be healthy for this D-line to be great. So health, I think, is assuming a level of production that perhaps we didn't get. But Steven, like, sort of generally, defensive line needs to be there. It makes a lot of sense to me. What held them back in the end wasn't really health, because Teron Vincent did play and Coop was all the way back and doing his thing, right? And, you know, like, it wasn't like Zach Harrison and Tyreek Smith missed a million games. Now, they had some guys miss COVID. Tommy Togi, I missed for COVID, right? But health wasn't the issue necessarily. But, like, the idea of defensive line production makes sense.
No, yeah. And when they say health, I'm pretty sure this – that was sent pre-COVID, so they're not probably thinking about COVID being one of the issues.
Nothing was pre-COVID. This is not from February. COVID was here in March. This is like from May or June or whatever. So COVID is here. COVID has been here for forever. It's been here. I don't even remember.
What is that? what does a full football stadium look like?
Yeah.
No, I you're right. I think the problem ever when you say, oh, if a team is healthy, they'll be this, that, and the third. We were saying that about a bunch of guys just based off of what the recruiting rankings are and them never actually proving it. It's not like it was a situation with Chase Young where he had 10 sacks even with bad ankles. So imagine if he gets healthy, what he can do. Tyreek had flash. We did not know a single thing about Teron Vincent enough to say it. And we had seen enough from Jonathan Cooper to know that even fully healthy, what he did in 2020 was going to be the best of what he was going to be. So it's, I understand why it's on the list. And usually with sports, health is always going to be on lists like this. But in context of what the people were talking about on the defensive line, I don't think it should be as high as number two.
So I think, like, again, it's like, I think the texter put health because there was an assumption of production. You know, the production part, I think, is exactly right. I mean, I think one of the main things of why they didn't quite get over the top was they didn't get home enough. So like Nathan, the idea of the, of a defensive line issue being number two on this list, whether it's health or production, what do you think?
I think it made sense only because also at the time we didn't know that Haskell Garrett was going to be Haskell Garrett.
Yep.
We didn't really know that Tommy Togiai was going to be Tommy Togiai. Even we knew he was going to start. I don't think we knew he would have the impact he would have for sure. And we had also underestimated Jonathan Cooper. We had underestimated, we probably overestimated some other defensive ends and underestimated him. So that there were just so many unknowns there up front that it made sense to think, well, if the very best guys, the guys who were deemed to have the most talent, can't be healthy, then that defensive line was going to potentially be a crisis. I remember talking multiple times last year about just my concerns about the interior defensive line, if that was going to make Ohio State really susceptible against the run. And that turned out to not be the case, not so much really because of health, because Teron Vincent wasn't healthy last year, but mostly because other guys stepped up and had career years.
All right, number three on the list was pass protection. This offensive line will not have a contender to be the best in the country if their pass protection improves, unless their pass protection improves from last season. So, I mean, I think you could argue that Nicholas Petit-Frere and Thayer Munford were almost the MVPs of last year's team in some way. And so, like, this hits home in a big way because they did. Like, their pass protection was really good. Now, sometimes it was like, you know, maybe early on, were there holes there in the run game or were they missing holes? Were Myers and Davis exactly what we thought? But the tackles were awesome and I think gave them a shot. And like, if we envision a world where Thayer Munford and Nicholas Petit-Frere are average and are letting Penn State in the backfield after Justin Field and are letting other things happen, it changes everything. I think this was a really good one that did hit. They were like, the Buckeyes need to pass protect, and the two guys who were at the forefront of that discussion did it all year, and the result was that Ohio State made a national championship game. So I think the texter nailed this one, Nathan.
Yeah, and as you just said, like, I think, again, it's almost like because of who – we didn't know what was coming with certain players, and this is another example of it, where I think we thought Thayer Mumford would be solid. We thought Nicholas Petit-Frere had a good chance to – probably hold off Paris Johnson for that starting right tackle job, but even that wasn't assured. And then by the, you know, halfway through the season, we realized that those guys were playing as well as anybody in the country at their positions. And I think that was crucial. And I think it's going to be crucial again.
All right. Number four was a playmaker in the secondary, not necessarily from an interception standpoint, but from a big play stopper, a corner batting the ball away on third and five in the fourth quarter against Penn State is a huge, huge play. I, again, think this is right because they didn't and they missed it, Stephen, right? The idea of like, hey, they need somebody to rise up to that, you know, Jeff Okuda, Denzel Ward, Marshawn Lattimore, Damon Arnett level. And all year we could feel it missing. And then when it really got down to Clemson and Bama and it was like, man, they don't quite have the dudes in the secondary to stop this. We talked about this all year, Stephen. So I think this was an area where the texter was correct. They needed it and they didn't get it. And not getting it is one of the reasons they couldn't beat Alabama.
It happened one time all year where you needed to play from the secondary and it happened. And that was Sean Wade with the pick six, the game saving pick six to seal off that game. But other than that, there were plenty of times where even if the game was already decided, going back to the Penn State game where Jahan Dotson had those catches. And at that point, we were all still, It's just one game. It happens sometimes when you're an outside corner. You get beat. Don't worry about it. And then it kept happening and kept happening. It almost seemed like it got worse every single time, how often it was happening, how bad the play would look. So, yeah, outside of that Indiana pick six, I don't remember another time where the secondary came through when they needed to come through.
And that's a thing that Ohio State is used to having. So that's a very smart thing. And this might be number five, might be the one that the texter nailed the most. Confidence in the running backs. I think letting a guy get a rhythm is huge for a running back. And that was one thing I really think hurt J.K. Dobbins in 2018. It's okay to have a multi-back system, but if a guy is on a roll, stick with him, which Nathan is like, predicting the rise of Trey Sermon, 35 carry a game, 300 yard monster in the Big Ten championship game against Clemson, which like absolutely like tied everything together. And part of it was because Master Teague got hurt, right? And like early on when it was like Teague, well, it seems like it's Teague, but then they put Sermon in, like it wasn't as good. And then sort of not by choice, but because they had to, they stuck with one running back and he put up the greatest rushing game in Ohio State history. And that mattered for the offense. I think this is a really good one.
Well, I would actually argue that that number five actually reflects more what Master Teague did most of the season, like early on where they sort of had both guys and they didn't know which one was playing. I mean, neither one of them played that well in the season opener. And it was really the first one to step up and really assert himself. That was a guy that they rode for the majority of their season. And it wasn't until, like you said, later on, almost by they were forced to put Trey Sermon in there and just let him run wild. And he capitalized on that. But I think it was more if they had not committed to Master Teague the way they did on a couple of occasions early that year. I don't know that Ohio State loses those games, but you don't know how things maybe go sideways if they don't run with the guy who was running confidently, as opposed to just feeling like they had to keep using both in some kind of a timeshare.
But again, the discussion is winning a national title, and it's just, you can't assume the regular season in the Big Ten, not quite, but almost. And so a lot of this is like winning in the playoff against the other best teams in the country. And one of the reasons they beat Clemson is because they gave the ball to Trey Sermon 31 times and he ran for 193 yards. So
but Master Teague wasn't available.
No, I know. But if Master Teague would have been available, they might have tried to run them both and it wouldn't have been as good. And the offense wouldn't have been as good. And they might not have beaten Clemson.
But if Master Teague had been available, he means he wouldn't have got hurt in the Big Ten championship game, which means we never would have found out that Trey Sermon was running the way he was. It wasn't a decision that they made.
No, but the fact of the matter, because so they did kind of commit to Master Teague to some early games, but to your point, they're probably going to win them anyway, right? I mean, it's not like they learned. It wasn't like, oh, they figured it out. It's like if by the end of the year they were thrown into it. But I guess the point is this person says they need to stick with the running back when he's hot and let him roll, right? And then because they had no other options, they did that against Northwestern and Clemson. And I think doing that did help them win. And I think you could argue that if they're running, that I think sticking with one guy and letting him roll was more effective than if they had Teague and Sermon splitting series that game. And the fact that that guy did get rolling against Northwestern and Clemson really did matter. And if he didn't get rolling, I think you could make some argument that they don't win, maybe even against Northwestern, right? But that he helped them win. And so I guess if your point is like, they needed to figure it out. They didn't figure it out. They were forced to let it happen. But then when it did happen, I think it was an important fact of getting them to the national title game.
Unquestionably. I mean, I think you would definitely say, my point was just that the example that this texter was giving was more like what they did with Master Teague against Penn State than what they did with Trey Sermon later, because against Penn State, it was an actual choice. But the way the choice came in was, I guess, against Northwestern, when the rest of the offense was really stagnant, except for the running game that was blowing the doors off the place and just committing to whoever at running back at that point. It may have been Master Teague if he had never gotten hurt. And he's the one who goes on and has the monster game. We'll never know. But that's the example, I guess, that you would say there, that it was more just committing to the moment than it was committing to a person.
Do you think that's an important idea though, Stephen, of like committing to a guy? And I guess it doesn't even necessarily mean committing to a guy
all season. It means like committing to a guy in a moment when a game is on the line, and then that guy helping you win that game. And part of the reason you win that game is because you let that guy roll with it.
Yeah. I've never been for whatever. It's not a two back system, but whatever this thing they've been trying to do two of the last 3 years, I've never been a fan of it. I mean, I asked Tony Alford about it when we got him this spring about the idea of just like finding your workhorse and rolling with that workhorse and why it's so important to a running back's rhythm and everything else under the sun. So yeah, this is important. It's for a team who runs the ball the way Ohio State wants to run the ball. You need to find, you got one guy and let him get a rhythm.
Okay, so that's redoing that. So Texter from the 513, you know, text us and let us know it was you. We'll give you a shout out if you want to throw your name in, or like if you're listening to this and it's you, thanks for that. Sometimes we save texts for 13 months or 11 months or whatever it was and use this, because we now do want to talk about what we think are the five things, kind of like this, right? This is the template. We're stealing it from the Texter. The five things that Ohio State needs to do to win a national championship in 2021. And again, that's not get through the Big Ten season undefeated. That's beat Oklahoma, Georgia, Alabama, and Clemson, and whoever else when it matters. So we will do that next. Our lists on Buckeye Talk. Doug LaMaurice, Stephen Means, Nathan Baird. If you want to help shape this podcast, and by shape this podcast, I mean do our jobs for us for free, and actually not even for free. You pay us for the right to help us do our jobs. Be a texter. That is quite a tagline. Pay us for the right to help us do our jobs. 614-350-3315. If you want to try it out, 14-day free trial, $4 a month after that. Let's start at the top. A lot of times we go 5-1, but let's talk about the most important stuff first. So whenever somebody has, if somebody has something about Dallas Gant, and it's not exactly what you said about Dallas Gant, and it's number one on someone's list, but you have a Dallas Gant kind of thing at number four, jump in. We'll have the discussion. Now you say, my number four is a Dallas Gant similar thing. So we don't repeat the discussions, but Nathan, we'll start with you and we'll start at number one. And I guess it's an order of importance, right? I mean, lots of things are important. I don't know that there is a singular, well, if this doesn't happen, like that's it. Except there might be one, but like I actually doing the list has made me think that one is not as important as I thought it was, except we're going to have a huge discussion about it. Nathan, what is your number one on the list of things that have to happen for Ohio State to win a national title in 2021?
Yeah, this one I put at number one only because I think there are ripple effects, and this may not come as a surprise, but I put that the roster has to buy into the quarterback pick and the quarterback has to validate it. We've talked a couple of times about all of the like secondary dynamics that go into this quarterback competition, and about the kind of idea of just ruthlessness about Ryan Day. He's orchestrated this thing where you've got three freshman quarterbacks, two redshirts and a true freshman who are competing for this job. And you've got another guy coming in next year. And I guess the way I see it is that you've had this competition on the up and up. The competition, the winner of the competition should be obvious, I guess, to the rest of the roster, or at least one that they believe is made for the right reasons. And then that guy has to go out and back it up and prove that he was the guy who should have gotten that opportunity. If he goes out and is shaky and you have guys looking over their shoulders, and I'm not saying that we talked before about how this is the thing where you use two quarterbacks early in the season. I'm not saying that that wouldn't still work. But I'm talking more about just like the confidence. If quarterback is a position where confidence wavers throughout the roster, I think you have a problem that can kind of build on itself.
So this is both sort of quarterback play, but quarterback competition, how it affects the whole team. This is a nod to 2015 when they were filled with talent and jacked around with the quarterback starter all year. And it help mess them up. And it was sort of the foundational thing of what messed them up in 2015, other than Ed Warner and Tim Beck being bad at calling plays. And so your number one thing is like, avoid that kind of thing. But I think you make an interesting point. It's not just for the quarterbacks, it's for the roster as a whole. So let's make this our quarterback discussion, because hey, guess what? We're going to talk about the quarterbacks when it comes to winning a national title. Just to double check, Nathan, do you have anything else related to the quarterbacks on your list?
No, I focused it all into that one.
So it's this, it's let a guy win it and everybody believes in it, which covers a lot of things. Steven, of course, I'm assuming you have a quarterback thing on your list. Where is it and how did you phrase it?
It's number one and it's titled, "The Quarterback Has to Be Justin Fields-ish." I don't think you have to be all the elements that Justin Fields was, because every quarterback is its own thing. Just like I don't feel like Bryce Young has to be Mac Jones or Tua, and DJ Uiagalelei has to be Trevor Lawrence. But you probably need to be 80 to 85% of them, especially by the time we get to the postseason. You need to be up there, because as we've seen in their own way with the last two national championship winners, the quarterback's got to be pretty awesome. They can't just be a fall off and you expect everyone else around it to pick it up. They got to be in pretty awesome. And Mac Jones wasn't the most talented quarterback, but in his Mac Jones way was pretty awesome. And we know, and we just, I mean, Joe Burrow was Joe Burrow. So I think spend the season being Justin Fields-ish. And by the time we get to Michigan, Big Ten Championship, college football playoff world, you're up there. Even if you aren't officially a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Okay. So as I was doing my list, I was really thinking about what makes Ohio State win, I think. And we've talked about it so much that it feels like it has come around on the idea of, like, if you don't have a Heisman Trophy candidate at quarterback, it's hard to win a national title. But through the course of making this list, I talked myself into the idea that they can do it without the quarterback being a Heisman Trophy level player, because they have the two best receivers in college football. They have two of the best tackles. They have a bunch of other five stars on the offensive line. They have a tight end that we think is great. Jeremy Ruckert got mad about another thing recently. There was someone else put out a list of the 50 best tight ends, and I think he was 17th. And he was like, thanks for the motivation. We think Ruckert's really good if they throw him the ball. We think Trevion Henderson has great potential. They are almost like 10 for 10 at the other spots. It's like Paris Johnson's going to play on the offensive line and probably crush people. They have a lot of A pluses and some A's and maybe a few A minuses at the other 10 spots. And if the defense is better, I have kind of talked myself through this exercise, which is why we do this stuff. We don't just do this stuff to fill air in the summer. Believe it or not, we have a purpose. It's to help us constantly evaluate and reevaluate what we think about this team. Guys, I have come around on the idea that I don't think maybe the quarterback has to be a superstar. So the quarterback thing for me was fifth on my list. And the way I phrased it was this. Because this is just like brass tacks about making the national title game, right? There's like the theoretical play well, do this, but it's like, what are you doing on this weekend? Because if you lose, you're screwed. What are you doing against this team? Because if you can't do it, you're dead, right? So my thing was, be ready in week two and don't make killer mistakes. Don't lose the Oregon game, young quarterback making your second career start. Because if they lose to Oregon, it doesn't mean they can't make the national title game, but it's going to be tougher. So it's like, just like whatever that means, like the quarterback can't ruin it, like happened with JT Barrett in 2014, and they managed to come back from it. But they had to win the Big Ten title game 59-0. That's a tough road. So I think it would be best for them to avoid that road. So have the quarterback not make mistakes in week two, and then in the playoff, make a couple big plays when you need it. But that's not carrying the team. That's not being as good as Justin Fields. That's not being a Heisman candidate. A play here or there, but otherwise it's like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and Jeremy Ruckert and Thayer Munford and Nicholas Petit-Frere and Trevion Henderson, who will carry the load when you're just kind of like getting them the ball in some spots. And I really wound up making a list that had four things above a quarterback, which goes against everything we've said about the playoff and everything we've said about the current world. But because they're so talented on the other 10 spots on offense, I think maybe they have a chance to be the exception to the new rule. So is that crazy? Because I wouldn't have necessarily thought that before I started making this list. But when I started making it, I was like, well, there's a couple other things that I really think they need to have more.
I get what you're saying, But I feel like there are a bunch of Georgia fans who felt the exact same way, because that roster last year was ridiculous, except that quarterback, and it held them back.
So that is a great point. So I could add number six. Play better than Stat LeBarnett. I'm Stat LeBarnett, here to say to C.J. Stroud and Kyle McCord and Jack Miller, do not use me as an example. Please learn from my mistakes as I single-handedly held the Georgia Bulldogs back from winning a national title. But let us all remember that I only got into Georgia because my daddy was a hedge fund manager. Then I was a 400 recruit way down there. I was not nearly as highly rated as Kyle McCord or C.J. Stroud. So, Stephen, I understand your point, but also keep my name out of your mouth when you're talking about C.J. Stroud and Kyle McCord. There is no greater insult than to compare those quarterbacks to my level of play.
But I think that Georgia situation almost speaks to what I put number one, which was when Jamie Newman opts out, they didn't have the second option. That I think the roster was confident in another quarterback, and it wasn't Stetson Barnett. And I don't think they got to use that quarterback until later in the season. Like, remember 2018, Clemson wins a national championship with Trevor Lawrence. He's not a Heisman top 10 vote getter that year. Doesn't finish really anywhere near the voting. But now that was because he didn't play the full season. But when they had to make that decision, and the Ohio State decision is a little bit different because it's a more open competition going into the year between three guys. But when Clemson had to make that decision, when Dabo had to make that decision, he did. He made the tough decision to bench the proven returning guy and go with the true freshman, and that team makes a national championship. And I think that kind of, again, speaks to the dynamics at play here, that it's more about the confidence in that position. Because I know what you're saying, Doug, as far as all of the other elements that will be in play for Ohio State. The problem is that I sort of assume that to win a national championship at some point, and possibly in those last two games when the season is on the line, when that championship is on the line, your quarterback is going to have to go out and make the plays that win the game.
So I do think to your point, Nathan, so Stephen was very specific, which again goes along with everything we've said, which is your quarterback needs to be awesome. He's saying not be Justin Fields, but be Justin Fields-ish. Yours, Nathan, was a little bit more about don't have a controversy, have the team believe in the quarterback. I do think a team can believe in a guy who's like a B or maybe even a B minus. And especially when he's a young guy and they're like, hey, man, you're in a tough spot. We're here for you. That like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, if the passes to them are a little off target, I don't think they're going to be like, darn it, make a better throw. Guy making your second career start, I think they're going to be like, we got you. I got you. You were a little off target. I'm going to make a one-handed catch, right? And I think it's going to be a little bit like if C.J. Stroud, Justin Fields held the ball, and maybe it's Kyle McCord. If the starting quarterback, last year, Justin Fields would sometimes hold the ball to make a big play. If they have a young quarterback who's holding the ball because he doesn't know what's happening and he's frozen, I think Thayer Munford and Nicholas Petit-Frere will be like, we got you. We're going to block our guy for 9 seconds. Take your time, right? That I think there can be belief without it being a belief in an All-American, Nathan. So I think there is room for like yours to happen without necessarily Stevens happening. And I think there's a path. Now, I mean, it's like your other 10 guys got to be A's. It's like we got 10 A's and a B minus at quarterback, but that was enough. I think there is a path for that. And I'm not saying the quarterback is going to be a B minus. I'm saying I think there's a window for them to win a national title, even if he is a B minus. And then, by the way, if he is a Heisman candidate, then okay, now we're rolling. So do you kind of agree with how I'm characterizing what you're saying, Nathan?
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like, and again, it goes back to the team buying into what Ohio State decides to do at that position too. Because we've talked about, like, does it make sense to have a starter and then a second guy who you play more than a backup, that you play more frequently than that early in the season because you feel like you have to get everybody real reps for that second guy to be ready? And does the team buy into that, understand what's going on, and then do both of those guys play at a level that validates that, or does it become some sort of a weakness on the team? I think mine can be interpreted in, I guess, a number of ways. And it's not necessarily that the quarterback has to go out there and blow the doors off the place. It's that the quarterback has to go out there and validate the trust that's been placed into him by the coaching staff.
So, Steven, are you listening to this part of the conversation and just being like, you guys are living in a fantasy world? If your quarterback's not awesome, you're not going to win a national title in the modern college football era?
Yeah, a little bit, because it's almost, I mean, you just pointed out all the things that Ohio State offense has without, even with this, in spite of the quarterback. It's almost like CJ Stroud, Kyle McCord, and Jack Miller are being given this luxury car with all of these cool little tinsels and things up on it. And you go, now, let's just make sure the oil's always changed and that the wiper fluid is always in there and that the taillight's not out. It's like, no, you just gave this kid a luxurious car. He needs to drive it like it's a luxurious car. Because the other kids who have luxurious cars, they're driving their cars beautifully. At least we expect them to. So they need to keep – that's what we're trying to keep up with. We're keeping up with C.J. Stroud is the expected guy to win the job. He's number three behind two of the other teams we're talking about as far as where he was in his ranking with those quarterbacks. And then Georgia and Oklahoma just have returning five stars. That's the level they need to be playing at if they want to win a national title. Them just being okay because the talent is so great around them just gets them through the Big Ten. But as we've seen, that doesn't win you a national title.
But those teams don't have Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson.
It's fair. I mean, they
their receivers aren't as good. So I'm saying, like, I mean, it's like, okay, if Ohio State gets the ball back in a semifinal and they need to drive for the winning touchdown, I think it's possible that, like, the quarterback makes a throw that looks like it's going to be picked off, and Garrett Wilson, like, goes up between two defenders and catches the ball with his face mask. And, like, and that's how they get the game-winning touchdown. Not because the quarterback was awesome, but because he made kind of a bad throw and Garrett Wilson bailed him out. And then on the next play, they handed off to Trevion Henderson, and Thayer Munford murdered the guy across from him, and Trevion Henderson ran for 30 yards. And, like, I just think that maybe you could come away from a game where the quarterback doesn't make crushing mistakes, but it's like the receivers are awesome, the offensive line is awesome, but you don't think to yourself, wow, the quarterback led that game-winning drive.
So it's almost they won a national title in spite of the quarterback.
Well, I mean, like, it's one of those things. There's a level of play, right? But I mean, like, so Trevor Lawrence at times was carrying them. And it's like one of those things. It's very hard. We're splitting hairs a little bit in a conversation like this. I mean, how good is Mac Jones? I don't know. He sure ran a lot of RPOs and hit guys on the move who then was surrounded by a first round running back and two first round receivers. And he looked awesome. And, like, will we ever have proof? Well, maybe he was awesome, or maybe he just wasn't that awesome. And so, like, could C.J. Stroud be the Mac Jones of this offense, or be slightly less than Mac Jones and have them go crazy, right?
If you're selling me that, then okay. I understand why it's fifth, if you were to sell that.
And I didn't watch enough Alabama to know how often Mac Jones made a great throw and how much he just sort of made, like, an average throw, and the receivers did crazy things.
Yeah, it was the receivers doing crazy things.
So if
you're going to sell that, then, like, yeah, I understand. If that's the idea, it's pretty much none of the pressure is on them, because it's like, here, just get the ball out of your hands quick and then let Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson be awesome. And that basically the ball's out of your hand in 1.5 seconds before you have to process any information. I can see a world where they do that. I just haven't really seen that offense from Ryan Day to that level. Even Dwayne's offense wasn't that crazy as far as taking all the pressure out of the quarterback's hand. So that's part of my thinking, is there are some aggression things that Ryan Day wants to do that Steve Sarkisian just would never have done with Mac Jones. So some of that is play calling then.
By the way, I don't have the receivers on my list, though, either. It's like, the quarterback can be average and the receivers will bail him out. But I also didn't put the receivers on my list. It's a weird list. All right. I'm going to give my number one now, because you guys both have the quarterback number one. I actually do think that this actually is probably more important, because it gets to a thing we just talked about. My number one is that Trevion Henderson needs to emerge as a dominant number one running back. Because to me, when you look at the recent success of Ohio State football, they are at their best when they have a guy. In 2019, that was J.K. Dobbins. And to the point we talked about earlier, Nathan, at the end of 2020, in the Northwestern and Clemson games in 2020, not by choice, but because they had to, they had that guy. Trey Sermon became that guy, and it was very important to them. 2017, J.K. Dobbins was that guy. 2015 and 2014, Ezekiel Elliott was that guy. That if they have kind of a, like, it's kind of Trevion, it's kind of Master Teague, we can't rely on that guy. Like 2016, Curtis Samuel bailed him out, but then they got shut out in the playoff because their offense wasn't good enough, because like they didn't have the running back they could rely on. Also, JT wasn't, you know, it wasn't Justin Fields. But I just think that is a really important thing. I guess it could be Master Teague emerging as that. I just don't see it as possible at the level that I think you sort of expect an Ohio State running back to be at. So I just think it's really important, maybe not by week six, but like by the end of the year, that like Trevion Henderson is a guy that you can give the ball 25 times and you think he might rush for 180 yards. And if they struggle in the run game, then I guess, because then it's like, okay, well then do what Dwayne Haskins did in 2018. Well, Dwayne Haskins was in year three. This quarterback just got here. Yes, they're first time starters, but I don't know that the quarterback is as ready to do what Dwayne did on his own. So if the run game is jacked up, I think that's tougher. That's why I put Trevion number one. Nathan, is that too high? And did you have a Trevion slash run game thing on your list?
No, I think number one is defensible. I had my number three was Trevion Henderson reaches his perceived ceiling by the end of the season. So doesn't have to be what J.K. Dobbins did from week one, but I think it needs to be sort of what Ezekiel Elliott did, which is by the time you get to the end of the year, you're showing up in big ways and big moments, and at times even putting the team on your shoulders, especially because you've got a freshman quarterback who's going to be playing in those big moments for the first time. I have always pushed back on this idea of, I think early on they can use multiple running backs, and I don't think that's going to cost them anything, especially as Trevion Henderson is kind of getting his feet under him. I know that it didn't work in 2018 and that it probably contributed to why J.K. Dobbins had some of the issues he did. It wasn't really at all, I think, what was going on last year. I think that was a totally different dynamic, and it has worked at other programs. You can go look at other teams who have had big seasons by using more than one running back. So I don't think that's a crisis in and of itself. But I think as far as what potentially helps win you a national championship is if Trevion Henderson very quickly gets to a place where everything that everybody sees in him is attainable this year, and he can go out and actually display that on the field, because I think you're right. He is projected to be able to do things that nobody else on this roster can.
And it's hard because like history matters, but also, you know, I think we believe that Ryan Day has multiple ways to like run an offense and be successful. But it's like, when you look at like, oh, what is it like when Ohio State's awesome? It's like, oh, like 2002 when they had Maurice Claret. And oh, 2014 when Ezekiel Elliott was killing people the last three games of the year. And oh, 2019 when they were as good as anybody and J.K. Dobbins ran for 2,000 yards. Like, that's what it looks like. So I guess that doesn't mean it's impossible without that, to your point, Nathan. Other schools have done it. But man, that's what looks like here, Steven. So like, did you have a running back thing on your list, Steven? And what do you think of me having this one?
It's number two for me. And that was going to be my point. I don't think I remember any Ohio State national championship team who actually won it where the running back wasn't better than the quarterback. I just don't remember. And some of that is style of play back in the day. But as recently as 2014, Ezekiel Elliott was the best player on that team, not Cardale Jones. And Maurice Claret was the best player on that team, not Craig Quinzel. So that's why it's so high, because of that. It's been proven that this is how Ohio State wins national championships. My wording for it was Trevion Henderson, and in parentheses, not injury, forces Ohio State's hand. Because that's been part of the problem, is it took Master T getting hurt for them to just give the ball to Trey Sermon, whether he deserved it or not. At that point, when he's doing what he's doing, you keep giving him the ball. To an extent, it took Mike not being all the way healthy in 2017 for J.K. Dobbins, not so much start, he probably would have started anyway, but get the ball that much, as much as he did in that Indiana game. Because if you remember the very next game, he only got it 13 times. And then the next game, he only got it 13 times and ran for 172 yards. And was like, oh, okay, here you go, J.K. We'll just keep feeding you the ball. So don't let injury be the reason why they finally decide this is our guy. I think you're right, Nathan. He doesn't have to be awesome every single week. I just think he has two games at the beginning of the year that can make us go. If he against Minnesota or against Oregon, he goes crazy, we can spend Tulsa, Akron, Rutgers, and Maryland going, hey, how come he's not getting the ball more? And by the time we get to that Indiana game after the bye week, it's the Trevion Henderson show.
And I do think, again, when we talk about it, it's really, we're talking about win a national title, which means, I mean, we think they'll be good enough kind of however they do it. They're probably going to be good enough to get to the playoff. So then it's how do you win a semifinal? How do you win a national title game? But to your point, Stephen, who is the best player in the Big Ten championship game? Trey Sermon. Mm-hmm. Justin Fields wasn't the best player in that game. Trey Sermon was. So there are going to be moments where you need to have a running back like that. Nathan, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that I think the forcing the hand is a good way to put it, because the counterpoint to what I said before about teams that have done that before with the multiple guys in backfield, whether that was Georgia, whether that was some of the Alabama, Auburn teams. I mean, those were all NFL running backs that they were picking from. You'd have sometimes two or three future productive NFL running backs in the same backfield at the same time. I don't think that is the situation that we're looking at Ohio State in 2021.
Yeah. I mean, as Browns fans know, that was Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. And the year before, Todd Gurley was there too, I think. So yep. It's like, okay, well, that's, you know, that's what we're talking about with the Ohio State receiver room, right? Like,
correct.
We don't think the running back room is quite at that point that Master Teague's going to be a second round pick and Travion Henderson's going to be a first round pick one day. We think that one of the guys has a higher ceiling, and that higher ceiling guy, when it matters at best against the best teams in the country, has to be able to like let it roll, let it go and kind of do his thing. And I think that is important for them to be able to do that. All right. So Stephen had quarterback one, running back two on his list. Nathan, what was your second thing?
My number two thing is Seven Banks cannot be by far the best cornerback on the team. And that isn't me saying that if it's somehow bad if Seven Banks goes out and is great this year. I know that people are expecting big things from him and him being able to take a step. And I think if he takes that step, that obviously makes Ohio State a lot better. I'm just saying that him being really good, him being even like first team all Big Ten caliber this year or whatever, if the other two cornerback spots are still a problem, then this defense is going to have problems. I think that at slot cornerback, Marcus Williamson either needs to build on the foundation he laid last year, or he needs to be usurped by someone else, a younger player who just steps up and says, you know, I've arrived and it's my time to take that job. And at that other outside corner spot, you either need to have Cam Brown really come back from that injury, or some combination of guys, the younger guys, the Ryan Watts, the legend Gavazos, those guys have to step up and assert themselves. I don't know if it's something that's going to happen on day one and or by week three or whatever, but you cannot go into another postseason with as many holes in the secondary as they had last year and expect to be able to contend for a national championship.
So I did not have a secondary thing on my list, which feels like a hole on my list, but I just went a little bit of a different way. Stephen, did you have secondary stuff on your list?
I have a secondary thing, but it's not at corner. Even though I do agree with what Nathan just said, Josh Proctor's got to just be at that single high safety spot. And we can't walk into every game not so much wondering who's going to be back there, but whether the production is going to be there. There has got to be a middle ground between him getting random interceptions like he was in the Big Ten championship game, or as we've seen him flash and as a young player, and being banana angle tackle guy. There's got to be a middle ground somewhere in there where at your floor, you're an erasure. Maybe you're Jordan Fuller. Maybe that's too much of an expectation given how good Jordan Fuller actually is, which we didn't realize. But there is a base floor level that can make up for the fact that Seven Banks is your best corner. But then also you actually catch the ball on some of these almost interceptions where I think he led the nation with like 11 almost interceptions. But there's got to be a middle ground there for him. And I think if he finds that middle ground, it puts some ease there with a team who wants to run a single high safety scheme and take some of that pressure off of your corners to just be, you know, shut down, locked down corners on every single snap.
Nathan, you were on this all last offseason about the secondary and about the potential issues on the defense. Nathan, do you believe that Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave could play at an All-American level? The quarterback situation could be great, you know, maybe not Heisman, but like not an issue at all. They get good quarterback play. The running back is good. Like the offense just works. And you know what? They replace the linebackers. They're okay. They get some more pressure up front. But like this, if there's holes in the secondary, similarly to where they were last year, it derails them. That like almost everything can work, and that the secondary is capable of being like the one thing that keeps them from winning it all.
By derails, you mean they can still get to the playoff, but then it's not good enough to win.
Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about winning it all. Last year, They were really good. They didn't win at all. So like a repeat of last year's season.
Again, and I say yes. And again, it's because you're not saying hole, you're saying holes. You start talking about having multiple places on the field where Ohio State may not even be in the top half of the Big Ten as far as the play they're getting from that position. I think that absolutely happened in the secondary last year, and it really hung over that team. And if you didn't have a Justin Fields who could step up and do some of the things he did, and I know he had a couple of rough games too, but the things he did against Clemson, the things he did at other times that year, then you don't know how that season goes. And this year, I think that there's less margin for error for this defense even because you're putting a freshman quarterback back there. You don't know how that is going to go this year. And you can't have multiple spots where people are just kind of – and it certainly can't be what Ohio State had last year, which were the kind of just standing palms up being like, well, what are we supposed to do? Like, we don't have anybody else to put out there. I did have Josh Proctor on my list originally when I first just like top of my head sketched it out. And then I ended up taking him off only because I don't – I think it is asking a lot to say to him that he needs to expect him to play like – Jordan Fuller as his floor, I think would be asking a lot. I think rather than asking the guy who may not actually be a free safety but has to play there to play at a much higher level, I'm just simply asking the cornerbacks to play at something approaching the Ohio State expectation. And I know the Ohio State expectation is high because of the All-Americans and first-round picks and stuff. So I'm not necessarily saying all three of these guys have to be that. I'm just saying you have to, again, be among the best in the Big Ten at all three of those spots. And then that, I think, takes some of the pressure off of your safety.
Okay. I had only one of my five things was defense-related, and I didn't go with the secondary. I mean, nobody listening to this would disagree with anything you two guys just said, given Ohio State's history of when they're good, what their secondary looks like, and given their history of when they're a step short, often the secondary is one of the things. So it's probably a hole on my list to not have that in there. My second thing, though, was something not related to Ohio State, which I think, again, when we're talking about national championship, the context of well, who they're playing matters. So I just put like Spencer Rattler, DJ Uiagalelei, Bryce Young, JT Daniels, like none of them can have like a Joe Burrow season, like a season where it's like, oh, well, because like I don't think so often, or at least sometimes there is just like a quarterback who goes bonkers. I don't think this year Ohio State has the quarterback who's going to go bonkers. So it's like that saying, right? I was just listening to a podcast about Rounders, the poker thing. Nathan, I'm sure you love the movie Rounders, right? That it's like, yeah. If you're at a poker table for half an hour and you can't find the sucker, it means you're the sucker. So like, if you're looking at college football and it's like, you know, it's the reverse of that, and you can't find the superstar quarterback, maybe you're the superstar quarterback. Like, I don't think Ohio State's going to have that this year. They might next year. They might the year after that. They might the year after that. They might the year after that. I just think this is like the year they probably don't. So I think there's a world like no matter how good they are, if Spencer Rattler is like unstoppable and throws for 400 yards and four touchdowns every game and Oklahoma's defense has a pulse, it might be like, congratulations, Ohio State, on making the national championship game and getting Rattlered. Or if DJ Uiagalelei is like, oh, look, he's better than Trevor Lawrence. And I know he's the same age as CJ Stroud and whatever, but like, Steven, I just have that on my list at number two, because if we're talking about winning it all, as good as they were in 2019, we're not sure they would have beaten Joe Burrow and that LSU offense because they were unbelievable. And as good as Ohio State was last year, it wasn't really about Mac Jones, but was anybody going to beat that Bama offense? It's just like, there can't be like a absolutely monster quarterback year, which means a monster offensive year, which means a monster team that like they just can't beat even at their best. But Steven, I do think it's possible. The reason I have that on my list is because I don't think it's a guarantee that we're going to get a team like that. I think Spencer Rattler could do that. I guess maybe JT Daniels could, but the Bama and Clemson quarterbacks are the same age as the Ohio State quarterback. They're first-year starters too. I do think maybe this is a window where it's like there's a lot of good quarterback play, but there isn't a Joe Burrow or there isn't a Deshaun Watson or there isn't what the Bama offense was last year. And I think that would certainly help Ohio State's national title chances.
I put it five for some of that being the reason, but also I wanted to make sure that the thing that I had something on my list that was not in Ohio State's control, but it had to be fifth to put more of the emphasis on the things they can control. Because you don't have like Ohio State, that's not on them. They can't control that Joe Burrow happened and that Alabama went crazy and everybody from the 2017 class basically decided to come back for their senior year. That's not on them. So, but my wording was this: Georgia is awesome, but not LSU awesome. And the reason why is their first game of the season is against Clemson. So DJ Uiagalelei, yes, he has a few games more experience, but it's the same kind of concept here of what he should have been walking into as a first-year starter playing against an extremely talented team who also finally got it together at quarterback. This is where Georgia can knock Clemson off the board. So now Ohio State probably doesn't have to worry about them because the ACC is awful. And so losing, it's going to be really hard. That's an uphill climb now for Clemson to get back into the playoff race, especially if there's three undefeated teams still in it. Oklahoma's defense is like the asterisk that I have to throw on Spencer Rattler. He might throw for 400 yards every single game, and they might put up 45 points, but they also might give up 44 points every single game. And you're going to lose eventually if you keep doing that. So that's my only issue with Oklahoma. Spencer Rattler might make the playoff with one loss and win the Heisman and be nowhere close to winning a national title game. Now, Georgia knocks off Clemson, and at some point they're going to have to play Alabama, even if it's in the SEC championship game since they're not on the schedule. So can Georgia be good enough to beat both of those teams but not look unbeatable in doing it? That puts my mind at ease with Ohio State if C.J. Stroud or Kyle McCord is not everything they should be yet.
That's really interesting. I like creating a world where Ohio State fans should root for Georgia because nobody thinks JT Daniels is Joe Burrow. And that's a decent bet. And it's like, okay, Ohio State, get there and root for Georgia to be on the other side and you like your chances. I like this as a very specific rooting strategy for Ohio State fans. Now, you know, maybe JT Daniels will throw for 500 yards a game. It's like, oh, he is Joe Burrow. But I think it's a very reasonable thing to think right now, just because he doesn't quite, you know, he transferred. He was a good player. He was a big time recruit, but he's not quite Bryce Young. He's not quite DJ. Those guys are still young. I think there's a window there that, a lot of what you said, I think, is very smart, Stephen. Nathan, you have talked about a lot like monster teams. How often do you get one? The luck of it. You know, I think I've argued at times, well, there's a monster team like almost every year, but like there really isn't every single year. I do think like Ohio State, like in 2023, like might be the monster team. I don't think they're quite the monster team this year. So I do. Did you have anything, Nathan, about avoiding a monster team, avoiding a crazy awesome season from a quarterback that would have a negative effect on Ohio State's chances?
Yeah, I didn't have anything on a national level. I had another one that is sort of leans towards that we can come to later. I think what's interesting, though, is so there were monster teams each of the last 2 years, but we knew Alabama was coming. I think we knew that was going to be a monster team. We knew everything they had coming back. We thought Mac Jones would be able to step in and be a pretty good quarterback. I don't think it shocked anybody that they ended up having a great year. Maybe it shocked people or surprised people the extent to which it went. The 2019 LSU one is the one that threw everything off. That was the year where Alabama took a dip, and that's supposed to be everybody's big moment. And then that behemoth steps up and says, no, wait a second, we're even better than that. Nobody's touching this, and they're taking it away. So I think that's the one that is almost the bigger fear, I think, in some ways for Ohio State. And maybe that gets to what Steven's talking about with Georgia, which is a team that I think people see is kind of hanging out there and maybe gets overlooked because it doesn't have Clemson's cachet. It doesn't have Alabama's cachet. And they've sort of been just sort of lurking there for a while. And then this is year they put it all together. And if they're a behemoth that nobody can touch, then it's a problem.
Okay. All right. So Steven, on your list, you had the quarterback thing one. Mm-hmm. You had the running back thing two. Is that correct?
Correct.
What's three on your list, Steven?
Three to close out mine is somebody on this defense not named Haskell Garrett is an All-American. And that's with all due respect to what Haskell Garrett was last year. But some of that might just be tied to him and Tommy Togiai being in tandem. So whether it's Seven Banks, just maybe all these draft people are right and he is a first rounder and we find that out. I'm out on the Josh Proctor first rounder thing, by the way. I'm done with that. Or Zach Harrison or Tyreek Smith decides that they're ready to take that step, whether it's Zach Harrison going, oh, wait, I am a five-star, it's time to start acting like it, or Tyreek Smith just looks like a guy who's a first rounder, or maybe it's just Jack Sawyer's just crazy awesome in a way we've never seen a freshman be crazy awesome before. Or even Taraji Mitchell, he's a former top 100 recruit. I don't know, maybe he just goes crazy all of a sudden. But somebody else other than just Haskell Garrett has to be at All-American level, because that's also in Ohio State's past when you're talking about national championship teams. There's multiple All-Americans on defense. And right now, we think there's a lot of guys where we think they're pretty good, but we're not 100% sure about anybody but Haskell Garrett right now.
I think All-American level is the important way to phrase that.
Yes.
Because last year, Ohio State had a consensus All-American at cornerback, and people thought it was a weakness of the defense. And so I don't care who gets named a All-American. I care who plays like an All-American. And I think the way that's an important way to phrase it. So who cares who ends up getting voted anywhere? It's a matter of how did you actually play in 2021?
So I do think, I mean, like you think about, for instance, when Ohio State played Clemson in 2019, and Clemson didn't win the national title, but it was like Isaiah Simmons was like a guy that like everybody was worried about. Like, what are you going to do? And he made a crazy play in that game, right? And you think about like Bama last year and that high flying offense. And it was like, oh, they also had Patrick Surtain, who's like the best cornerback in the country, right? That there are guys who you feel like can win things in the moment for you. I do have a defensive thing, Steven. You're just saying sort of like across the board. It could be in the secondary. It could be at any position, but like a game changing dude that offenses have to worry about. I think makes a lot of sense. I'm going to wait on my other defensive thing that's a little slightly more specific. But so, Steven, between everything everybody says, we have finished your list. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. Just to go over one more time. QB has to be 80, has to be Justin Fields-ish, Travion Henderson, not injury forces, OSU's hands. Somebody on defense is at an All-American level. I'll add that word onto it because that makes a big difference. Josh Proctor finds middle ground between being a boom and not being so boomer bust. And then number five, Georgia is awesome, but not LSU awesome.
Okay. So we have finished Steven's list. Nathan, how many do you have left on your list?
Two.
I also have two left on my list. So my number three, let's do that now. And it is defensive related. And I used a statistical shorthand to represent what I'm talking about. But I said Ohio State averages at least three sacks per game. And these are the years since 2012 when they have averaged three sacks per game. 2019, they averaged 3.86 sacks per game. They were third in the country in sacks per game. That's Chase Young. 2017, they averaged 3.21 sacks per game. That was 10th in the country. That's the four-man defensive end rotation. Everybody knows what I'm talking about there. 2014, they averaged three sacks per game. That was 13th in the nation. That's Joey Bosa going crazy. 13 and a half sacks for Joey Bosa. 2013, they averaged three sacks per game. That's seventh in the nation. That's Noah Spence, who's easy to forget about. Noah Spence, some Bosa, Ryan Shazier as a blitzer. But since 2012, those are the 4 years. And last year, they averaged 2.63 sacks per game. That was 37th in the country. And I went pass rush over coverage of my thing of what's the thing that has to happen. And it's the thing we talked about a million times last year. It's the thing that guys were talking about this spring. They've got to get home. I know that there's more to it than sacks. Sacks is one measure, often not the best measure for how you affect a game with the pass rush. But last year, there were too many times they were a step short. They almost got there, but they didn't. We saw that Jonathan Cooper was good, but he's seventh round pick good. He's not first round pick good. This is a Zach Harrison, Tyreek Smith have got to get back to the, if not Chase Young level, the Tyquan Lewis, Sam Hubbard level, right? They don't have to be a Bosa or a Young, but that level of like, hey, like Sam Hubbard was really good, man. Tyquan Lewis was really good. And then in tandem, especially they did some stuff. I just think they've got to get home and change some games by getting home. Nathan, is there anything in that range on your list?
Absolutely. Number four was Harrison, Smith, and Sawyer must bring intimidation back to the pass rush. And I think that I didn't specify it statistically the way you did with the sacks, but I think intimidation by definition is not pressure, because pressure is frustrating. A quarterback can still make a play when he's been pressured. A quarterback who is holding the ball while he's flat on his back, 7 yards in the backfield, can't make a play and by definition is losing yards. And that demoralizes the team in a different way. That has a mental effect on the game, the way just getting pressure and flushing a guy out does not. And that has to come back to this defense, I think, in 2021. I don't think that it has to be, you know, not one single guy has to emerge as Chase Young. I feel like we were talking about this last year, though, right? We were kind of saying like, well, nobody's going to be Chase Young. But if these guys can just sort of collectively, maybe you split the Chase Young impact between a couple people. And instead of being this off the charts A++ level, you've got a couple of B pluses and that could be enough. And I don't know that it was. I think you're right. I think they do need to get home more often. And so maybe it's sort of halfway between that and what Steven was talking about with some guys, somebody needing to play at that All-American level. But something has to happen where people start to fear what's coming off the edge from Ohio State a little bit more, not just respecting it.
Pressure is like a really good shot fake. It's effective. So it's only so effective until you realize that guy can't shoot. So yeah, at some point you got to get home, because in that pressure, when you are just getting pressures, it does impact the quarterback, because he knows if I don't hurry up, you might get home. But if you just, you know, beat your guy a little bit, but I still feel comfortable being in that pocket, all that pressure and how people grade that out doesn't really matter.
And it'll make the coverage better, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's the great debate. We've talked about this a lot. Coverage makes the pass rush better. Pass rush makes coverage better. In the NFL, you know, a lot of teams are deciding, like, do you pick the pass rusher? Do you pick the coverage guy? There's a lot of things I think statistically, and some teams are going more for the idea of coverage first. And if nobody's open, eventually the pass rush will get home. So maybe this should start with coverage for Ohio State, and it'll make Zach Harrison and Tyreek Smith better if Seven Banks and Cam Brown and Ryan Watts and Legend Cavazos are draped all over guys. But we've just seen it so many times before. It really is a lot like the, I mean, if you, they're so good at everything. It's one of those, it's like, what makes Ohio State great? It's like having great players everywhere. Thanks for your analysis, Buckeye Talk. But I do think, and maybe this is wrong, if you said, like, name two things that are a foundational piece of almost all great Ohio State teams, I think you could go with, like, dominant running back and great defensive end. Like, I think you could go there. You also could go with, like, dual threat, game-changing quarterback and great corner, right? I mean, and I wouldn't argue against it, but, like, we're so used to it. On the one hand, I keep saying, well, you can't expect anybody to be Joey Bosa or Nick Bosa or Chase Young. But on the other hand, they sure do have guys like that a lot. So maybe we should expect it. And we do think Jack Sawyer might be that. So I do think a lot of the things here, nothing, Nathan, that we're saying here is fanciful, right? There hasn't been anything we've said that it's like, well, they really need this to happen, but there's only like a 10% chance that it will. It's like, oh, the pass rush needs to get home. Oh, you mean with Zach Smith or with Zach Harrison, 5-star, Tyreek Smith, borderline 5-star, and Jack Sawyer, 5-star, they need to get home? Oh, that's important. Do you think they can do it? Like, it's right there, Nathan. We just saw a season last year where it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's not as if we're covering the Wisconsin and we're saying that to win a national championship, they need to have a 5,000-yard passer. Like, we're not imagining something that we've never seen before, and that nobody on the, you know, Ohio State built its roster the way it always kind of builds its roster. And it, part of that has been based on having this sort of deadly force coming off the edge. And I don't think – I thought last year I thought Jonathan Cooper had a great year, and I think some of these other guys flashed. But these guys have to step up and play more consistently at a higher level. I don't think anybody could dispute that. I don't think they would dispute that.
Okay, so we've got the pass rush covered. That was my number three. That was your number four, Nathan. That means each of us has one thing left on our list, and we'll get to those after this on Buckeye Talk. Nathan Baird, Stephen Means, Doug LaMaurice, drop a review at Apple Podcasts. Make sure you're reading cleveland.com/Buckeye Talk. That's kind of where we're sending you now. A little bit of a, you know, Buckeye Talk way of life rather than cleveland.com/OSU. Cleveland.com/OSU is still there. A couple extra things at cleveland.com/Buckeye Talk. All right. I have my number four left. Nathan, you have your number three left. Is that correct?
No, my number five.
Your number five. All right, Nathan, what is your number five?
So this was my one where I strayed from Ohio State. And I struggled with the best way to articulate it. I came around to, I have to be right about Indiana being a clear full step behind Ohio State still. that if I'm wrong about that, that if other people are right, that Indiana is this sort of like potential threat to Ohio State, that with Michael Penix, with everything they have coming back on defense, with this sort of influx of talent they've gotten through the transfer portal, that when those two teams play in Bloomington this year, Ohio State could knock them off, then that is a threat to Ohio State even getting to the playoff, let alone winning a national championship. I still think that I'm correct that there is a talent separation between these two programs that was obscured, that we gave Indiana too much credit for being able to come back from a 35-7 deficit and never tie the game, never take the lead last year. They deserve some credit for that. I think they got too much for that. I don't think they were as good as people gave them credit for being most of last year. And I think there is still a gap there, and that Ohio State should pretty easily plow through the East again this year.
It's interesting that here we are, and we're finally talking about anybody else in the Big Ten, because to be fair, the thing that kept them from winning a national championship in 2017 and 2018 wasn't Alabama.
Right.
Wasn't Clemson. It wasn't Trevor Lawrence. Wasn't Jalen Hurts or Tua. It was Josh Jackson and Nate Stanley and Rondale Moore and David Blau. And the thing that hasn't happened for 2 years. So you are bringing up the specter again, Nathan. And now Indiana is different from them because those were upsets out of the blue. Indiana would not be out of the blue. We were talking about the 2021 Indiana game 18 months ago. That was like the, hey, Indiana, they might have more experience. That's going to be the year Ohio State has a young quarterback. We have done the podcast here running through all the Big Ten quarterback situations. There are a decent number of good Big Ten teams that are going to have a much more experienced quarterback than Ohio State does, whether it's Penn State, whether it's Wisconsin, whether it's Indiana. Like, I guess we have to, like, we talked about it, Nathan, when you got here when Steven started here, like, we talked about the Iowa loss and the Purdue loss, like, all the time. And then they got through 2019 and 2020, and it didn't happen. Like, it didn't, it didn't really come close to happening. I mean, the Indiana one would be the closest, but as you said, Nathan, they were behind by 28. They never tied it. So how close is that? But raising that specter, especially when Ohio State's bringing a young quarterback, Steven, it makes sense that somebody brought that up.
Yeah, I get it. I halfly agree with it. I think I'd be a little bit more worried about it if I believed in Penn State, because then it gets interesting. We talk about trap games all the time and stuff, but it's just Penn State being what that has been in the past, and the week before that you have to go to Indiana, who might sneak up and get you. Now I'd believe in it more, but because of where it is on the schedule, they just kind of got a little push and a little bit of favor in Ohio State's direction, given the fact that they get 2 weeks to prepare for that game. And I don't believe in Penn State whatsoever. So now you can put a little bit more energy into that game and not be worried about your team looking forward to a top 10 matchup with Penn State.
We were discussing the idea of making a Market Down Monday page at cleveland.com/Buckeye Talk and sort of listing all the history of the Market Down Mondays. What were the topics? What did we mark down? Who was right? Who was wrong? I was looking through some recently just to look back and I just thumbed through on my phone, right? Looking for MIDMs. And we did do one last year, I think last summer. When will Ryan Day lose his first regular season game? And we were all very intrigued by this looming Minnesota game. Mm-hmm. And then we talked to Randy Johnson, who covers Minnesota, a couple weeks ago. And he was kind of like, Tanner Morgan, I don't know. And he wasn't critical, but he didn't say Tanner Morgan loaded for bear. This is the game that will define the Minnesota football program. Maybe other people think that, but Nathan, there was a time again, when you're looking 18 months out, where we at one point targeted at Minnesota on a Thursday night with a quarterback making his first start, which is all still there. And I'm a little less, I think that Ohio State could lose that less than I thought it a year ago, but like, that's not the one you're bringing up. You're bringing up Indiana.
Yeah, and again, I think before we ever talked to Randy Johnson, we saw Minnesota play with our own eyes last year, and I think that also told us that maybe that won't be quite the threat that we thought it was going to be. But yeah, I mean, the other part of this is, too, as we discussed on the quarterbacks episode a few weeks ago, that there are some other teams we think could actually be that threat from the West. Ohio State just doesn't play them in the regular season this year. They don't play Wisconsin in the regular season. They don't play Northwestern in the regular season. They do play Purdue, which I think is at home. They do play at Nebraska. And this kind of reminds me, what's looming with Indiana almost reminds me of Nebraska 2019. Nebraska had already lost a game when Ohio State had to go out there. But because of what had happened in 2017 and 18, there was that specter hanging out there of like, oh, that dangerous team from the West when you go on the road. And then Ohio State went out and just obliterated them. I don't know that they can go out and do that to this Indiana team. But if they can go out and easily handle business, I think that they're running the table in the Big Ten East. And they're running, probably running the table in the Big Ten again.
You mean going out west in Nebraska doesn't scare you the same way that going to Purdue and Iowa did?
Well, that's the thing. It's hard to predict in the summer. It's like nobody would have said, like, if we did this in 2018, it's like, what's going to derail them? It's going to be like, that Purdue game. You know, I mean, it's like.
So it's more the unexpected. It's maybe like Maryland is actually the bigger threat than Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, it's like and again, we've talked about a lot. We talked about it a ton. In 2019, we wound up talking about it less last year, I think, because it was a jacked up season and because they got through 2019. Okay. And now they got through 2020, the idea of like the game you don't see coming. And I'm sure we'll do specific podcasts, pick the game you don't see coming. I think like, you know, Taulia Tagovailoa and Maryland and a Mike Locksley offense, and they're getting some talent there. And like, I don't know, like maybe, right. I mean, it's like, you start to try to predict the thing you can't predict, but Ryan Day.
That'll be at Ohio Stadium, so that's a little bit different too.
It'll be the Rutgers game when there's top 100 quarterback commit is there on an official visit, so everybody plays up a level to prove a point that, yeah, this is why you should come here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Rutgers. It's just been a while since I've made fun of you, so.
Rutgers showing off.
Yeah.
I also don't know if people – I'll be curious. We can ask the listeners this. Like, was that a specific Urban Meyer thing that you felt like that the way Urban Meyer coached, or that Urban Meyer, you know, had a great ability to motivate? He was very motivationally oriented, but did that set you up for the game that, you know, the trap game that I hate trap games, but yet there's some evidence of them, right? Like, and then Ryan Day hasn't lost a regular season game. So do Ohio State fans not fear that the way they did sort of fear it after 17 and 18? I don't know. And then the thing we talk about again, it's like, well, what are they going to do? Go undefeated every year? I mean, it's like, oh, the regular season record is like, you know, 46-3. And then we spend 30 podcasts talking about the three. And it's like, what happened? And it's like, what happened is nobody wins every single game. So like, what are we talking about? But it will be interesting. You know, again, you end up comparing your losses, like as much as I said, Ohio State's got to have a quarterback ready for Oregon. They're probably, given the history. And that's the thing, Stephen, the one thing about like the Clemson Georgia thing, it's like, given history, you're better off losing to a good team than a bad team. So if Clemson loses to Georgia, those are going to be two of the top five teams in the country in the preseason. And one of them is going to lose week one. It doesn't mean the loser's out, because that's going to be the best loss in the country when we start comparing one loss teams in December. Right. So As important as I'm saying, hey, the quarterback's got to be ready for Oregon, it's also like, well, make sure the quarterback's ready for Maryland and Indiana, because those losses are what will hurt you more at the committee. So, but Nathan, did you like think to yourself, I've got to put a Big Ten thing on here just because of history or because of the fact they have a young quarterback and might have a hiccup or whatever?
Not necessarily a Big Ten thing. It was more just a, what threatens Ohio State's ability to win a national championship historically? And it hasn't necessarily been, I mean, once you get to the playoff, you've done the hard part. Well, I guess you haven't done the hardest part, but you've done a lot of the heavy lifting. You get into the playoff. There are things there that you can't control. Even as far as the seeding, there's subjective things that go into it. I think the bigger threat is when you have a championship caliber team or a playoff caliber team, and you stub your toe along the way against a team that you shouldn't lose to. And so that was what I think they have to find a way to avoid. And despite all of the things that they have going for them this year, the great receivers, the potential at running back, the potentially awesome offensive line, So many other things coming back that give them a great foundation. When you have a brand new first time freshman starting quarterback, when you do still have some holes on defense, there are still some vulnerabilities here that the right team could exploit.
All right, Nathan. So that finishes off your list. Run through your list real quick. 1 through 5.
That was my number 5. I have to be right about Indiana being a clear full step behind. 4 was Harrison Smith and Sawyer must bring intimidation back to the pass rush. 3, Trevion Henderson reaches his perceived ceiling by the end of the season. 2, Seven Banks cannot be by far the best cornerback. And 1, the roster has to buy into the quarterback decision, and the quarterback, I guess, or quarterbacks have to validate it.
Okay. 2 good lists from you guys. My last thing is what I had 4. And this is the thing I would say of anything that's been mentioned is like the least likely to happen, right? Or that it's the most fanciful thing. It's a thing that I say, this can't happen. And I really don't think it is going to happen, but I have seen it happen once in my time covering Ohio State, and it murdered a championship level team. And they have to figure out how to share the ball smoothly. They can't be worrying about, well, somebody had this amount of touches in this game, or no, we've got to get the ball. And of course, I'm talking about 2015, where every time, listen, and one of the overarching things here is that most of the time their offense is good enough. Like, however they do it, I went back between 2012 and 2020. This is their ranking in total offense, which is yards per game. Okay. 2012, they were 46th. 2013, 7th. 2014, 9th. 2015, 41st. 2016, 31st. 2017, 7th. 2018, 2nd. 2019, 4th. 2020, 7th. So since Ryan Day got here, they have been one of the top 7 offenses in the country in yardage all 4 years. But when I look at the fact that with all that talent in 2015, with JT Barrett and Cardell Jones and Ezekiel Elliott and Michael Thomas and all those guys and Evan Spencer, I guess not Evan Spencer, and Jalen Marshall, in 2015, they were 41st in yards per game, is nuts. How is that possible that they were that bad? And the answer is because they were forcing things. They didn't let it happen. Braxton Miller, Curtis Samuel, they were so worried about keeping the touches even and utilizing everybody. I have never believed in that you can have too many good players, and that was exactly what happened. And it was bad offensive coaching that couldn't figure it out. So I don't think they have bad offensive coaching. So I don't think that Ryan Day and Kevin Wilson will have the same problem with it that Urban Meyer, Ed Warner, and Tim Beck had with it. But that was an uber-talented team whose offense looked like crap for much of the year because they were trying to force stuff. So, like, Nathan, like, even the idea of that, of like, well, Olave came back, and last game, Garrett Wilson got 11 targets, and Olave only got 5 because that was sort of what the defense gave us. Man, we've got to get Olave more involved, and holy moly, Ruckert, everybody talks about we don't throw the ball to Ruckert enough, and we've got to get the run game going and Trevion, but we don't want to ignore Master Teague. And by like last year, almost like we said, Jamison Williams was a non-factor. It almost solved the problem because it was like, listen, Jamison Williams is not that good. He's definitely not as good as the other two guys. They never threw it to him. They only threw it to Garrett and Chris. But I think Jackson Smith-Njigba is going to be better than that. And by the way, the slot receiver is a more fundamental part of the offense. So like Jackson Smith-Njigba's got to get his. Is it even worth talking about, Nathan? Am I stupid for putting this on my list? Or if I even think there's a 15% chance of it happening, is it a reminder of don't let it happen?
No, I don't think you're stupid to put it on the list, but I do think that last year, and really these first 2 years under Ryan Day, are an indication that probably isn't a huge concern. I mean, for instance, the way that they've used the tight end is one example of that. They know they have 2 really good tight ends. They have had 2 good tight ends. Now it's Jeremy Ruckert by himself, but like most coaches around the country would kill for 2 tight ends like that, but they didn't overemphasize them in the passing game. They said, we're not going to throw to those guys at the expense of not throwing to these great receivers we have just to prove a point or just to, you know, balance things out. That's not what's best for the team. Last year, as we talked about before with the running backs, they didn't have some kind of a full timeshare. They gave both those guys a chance to prove themselves. And then when Master Teague was the one that was running with more confidence and and running better, was just playing better early in the season, then that was a guy who became the lead back for until he got hurt. I mean, they've made those decisions before, and with the receivers, obviously, you know, Olave and Wilson just dominated the targets last year, and part of it, maybe the pandemic and the chopped up schedule plays into that a little bit. But also, like, I think they were just going to, like, why would you not take your Heisman candidate quarterback and put the two best receivers possible on the field at all times and go to them? Like, I think that Ryan Day has very clearly demonstrated that he's not worried about that sort of thing. Now, I think it's worth putting on the list because he is still only 2 years in. The dynamics have been a little bit weird because of what happened last year. So it's worth just keeping in the back of our minds. But I think I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that that won't be a problem. I think if they do start to revert to that, if you take your eye off of winning and start to make it about these cosmetic things, that is definitely a thing that undermines potential championship teams.
I think one thing that's good about this version of it, that over the 2015 version of it, is I think everybody knows what the deal is. Everybody knows what the hierarchy is as far as targets and talent level and everything like that. It's very clear that Chris and Garrett eat first, and then we'll figure it out after that. While in 2015, it was like Michael Thomas, who barely got the ball, even given what that situation was when he had 56 catches. He probably should have had double that. But then also, there's no added new element of somebody that you feel like you need to get the ball to because you know what type of weapon he is. Braxton Miller isn't moving the wide receiver this time, and you have to use that, right? You can't not use Braxton Miller. We just saw what he did the last 3 years. Justin Fields isn't back playing slot receiver this time. And so that added element probably added a little bit of a headache that I don't think a coaching staff was quite prepared to handle. Because when you just say, oh, switch Braxton Miller to wide receiver, of course, it sounds like it's awesome until you actually have to do it. I think this time it can be a little bit more smoothly because those two elements don't exist.
There were specific things about that year. That Braxton thing is a really weird thing. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that that you mentioned, Nathan, is they were – Ohio State is still, like, all about winning. And, like, that – I'm not saying they weren't all about winning in 2015, but they were the defending champs. So they'd already done it, and then it was like everybody was back, and then it was like, well, we want to win, but we're so established, like, we've got to make sure we feed all these guys – who have earned it, where I think Ryan Day and this staff is still like, I don't, you know, we're not worried about feelings because we haven't won anything yet. We're worried about whatever wins us the national championship. And if that's Chris Olave having 130 catches and nobody else having more than 40, then that's what we're going to do to win the national championship. I think that's, of course, what they're going to do, where it was a little more complicated in 2015. So I acknowledge the similarity is, they have a lot of talented offensive players, but there are a lot of other things that are not similar. And another one of the main things is they are not breaking in a new offensive coordinator the way they were then when Tom Herman left and now Ed Warner and Tim Beck are doing it. This is the Ryan Day and Kevin Wilson show. It has been, it is. So that's not a complicating factor. So, you know, I just wanted to get it out there because we've all seen what can happen. I don't think it's going to go wrong, but I wanted to mention it. So my list is number one, Trevion Henderson emerges as a dominant lead back. Number two, Spencer Rattler, DJ Uiagalelei, Bryce Young can't be too great. Number three, average 3 sacks per game, which is a statistical measure of get home, get real pressure that matters. Number four, figure out how to share the ball smoothly. Number five, the quarterback has to be ready in week two and has to make a couple big plays in the playoffs. I thought that was good. There's a lot, but I think they can do it all, Stephen. Like, it's like, hey, between the three of us, I think we probably wound up with like 9 or 10 different things, right? But they're capable of going like 10 for 10. And if they go 10 for 10, they might win the national championship. We all picked them to win the national championship last year, right? Didn't we? Yeah, I think we all did, right? Because we were aware, we certainly were aware of Bama. We talked about Bama a lot, but we didn't know exactly it was going to be that, right? And we had the concerns about the defense, but we thought Fields with those receivers could overcome it. So it's like we were almost right. I don't know that we're going to go 3 for 3, picking them to win the national championship this year with a quarterback who's never thrown a pass in college football. I would kind of doubt that we would. But when you look at the landscape, Bama's lost a lot. Oklahoma still has its defense. Trevor Lawrence is gone, right? That there's not, I don't know that there is an obvious one that you would pick definitely ahead of Ohio State. And Stephen, if they hit on all or most of these, they're going to be right there.
The thing is, I mean, of everything we just listed, some of it crossover, some of it our own, there was only three things that weren't in their control. And it's, is Indiana going to be good or not? And really, the other two are kind of similar. It's, is Indiana going to be good or not? And is there going to be an LSU monster that that no one expected to happen? But outside of that, all of this is really boiled down to be a normal Ohio State team. Be good where you're supposed to be good. Have your quarterback not hold you back. And don't make stupid play calls, which has just been the formula for good Ohio State teams, at least in my 27 years on this planet. So these are all realistic goals, even if saying, hey, someone should be an All-American is a crazy thing to ask. We've seen it already, so just go do it again.
And last year, frankly, they did have some things that held them back that were not the norm mm-hmm. at Ohio State. So a lot of this is sort of like get back to the norm. It is a super high bar of what that norm is, but it's not do something you haven't done before. It's get back to what you've done a lot of the time. Nathan, how do you finish this off?
Yeah, the other thing I would point out is like there are only a couple things on this on these lists that we have not seen at all. I think there are things, you know, whether it's the pass rush, you could even say this about Trevion Henderson, that there's reason to believe that those things have been at least hinted at. Maybe like the secondary thing, and I guess some of the stuff with the quarterbacks, we haven't actually seen it with our own eyes yet. But there's a lot of what we came up with was like, well, We're not asking, as you said before, you're not asking Ohio State to do something that they haven't already set themselves up to do. It's a matter of just going out and accomplishing it.
Yeah, even like Trevion Henderson, it's like, oh, have a true freshman be an awesome running back who can carry the burden for an offense. It's like, oh, you mean like Maurice Claret in 2002 when it happened? Oh, you mean like J.K. Dobbins in 2017? Well, that's exactly what happened again. It's like, well, okay, that's a lot to ask, except we've seen it. Okay. That's a good national championship discussion to have in the summer. We will continue to do stuff like that. We appreciate you guys listening 5 days a week for Buckeye Talk, cleveland.com/Buckeye Talk. Visit the website each and every day. The texts, stuff coming through, answering football questions, answering recruiting questions. You can get on board 614-350-3315. 14-day free trial, $4 a month after that. Stephen Means and Nathan Baird. I'm Doug LaMaurice. Thanks for listening. And that was Buckeye Talk.